Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Brought to you today and every day here on The Fan by the law firm Condori & Murad, who will help you to draft a last will and testament, to set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Go schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you, get a discount. KMLawyers.com. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan. We have been covering the massive news of the week from all angles that the Commanders are looking to come home and that there's a deal on the table in D.C. for RFK 2.0, but they need support from the D.C. City Council. And so there are 12 council members, and we are about to have our fourth council member on the show this week, and that's Mr. Kenyon McDuffie, who is an at-large council member who joins us now here on The Fan. Councilmember McDuffie, thank you for the time. How are you?
Oh, I am. It's my pleasure to be here with you guys. I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited about the news and bringing the Commanders home. So hopefully you all are too. I bet you all are.
Yes, you have pegged us correctly. As sports fans, we would like a stadium in D.C., but there's a lot of questions to be answered, and obviously the job of the council is now to make sure this deal works for the city. You were at the press conference. Should we take that to assume that you are a yes on the stadium deal?
I was at the press conference, but I've also been, you know, one of the champions for bringing the Commanders back home to the nation's capital, their rightful place, back to their winning ways right here in D.C. And so me being at the press conference was just another example of my support of bringing our team home to D.C. And although there's still some questions that remain unanswered, it is the job of the council to vet those questions, to vet this deal, but ultimately to move this deal forward so we can get this thing done.
Council member, I've asked everybody that we've had on this, both for and against, et cetera, so I want to give you your chance to weigh in on it. What are your critics, or what are the critics of the deal, I guess on the opposite side, so to speak, what are they getting wrong here, whether it's misinformation or opinion-wise? Floor is yours.
Yeah, I think they are rushing to judgment. And I think anytime people hear that the city is going to spend money on something that it is at the expense of our residents. And frankly, it's quite the opposite. We're talking about making an investment in the future of our city. We're talking about prioritizing our residents when it comes to the thousands of jobs that are going to be created by this development. The stadium is obviously the anchor, but we're talking about 180 acres of opportunity. And when planned and when done right, which is what the mayor has sent to the council, we're talking about transforming an area that has been dormant for decades. And so we're talking about jobs. We're talking about opportunities for the district's small businesses. We're talking about neighborhood-serving amenities. We're talking about housing that is affordable for people across incomes. Really, there's too much potential for this site not to be developed. And so the stadium has to be the thing that is the catalyst that spurs the rest of the development that is to come.
Council Chair Phil Mendelson was on and made it pretty clear that he doesn't think the timeline works for a vote by July 15th. He says there's currently not enough support, But he went as far as to say that, you know, laying out how many months it was between even agreement and a vote at Nats Park and Audi Field and all these other locations, that there's no way to do this by July 15th, which is what the team is trying to get done to stay on track to open in 2030. What do you say to that?
Well, look, I think the time frame is important. I think the mayor has laid out the time frame that she's negotiated with their commanders. But I also understand from working with the chairman that we obviously have to do our due diligence as a council. It's our job to provide rigorous oversight of this deal and ask all the questions that residents want to know answers to, questions that we need to know answers to before we vote yes. But ultimately, we have experience with the monumental deal not too long ago. We know how to move quickly as a council. We've done it in the past. And I think the importance, the significance of this deal means that we have to work hard and quickly and smartly. I'm not talking about rush things along. I'm saying do our work in an expedited fashion that allows us to properly vet this deal and get to a yes vote so we can move it forward. I appreciate what the chairman is articulating, but I also know how important this deal is to our residents and to the future of the District of Columbia. While we're seeing all these financial challenges because of what the federal government is doing, some of the decisions that are happening there, we've got to grow our local economy. And this is, I think, one of the best ways to do that.
Councilmember, again, I'm just trying to put some balls on a tee here for you with what opponents have said. So answer this one for me, if you wouldn't mind. This is prime riverfront real estate here in Northeast D.C. And it's, and you know, I can't remember exactly what the value is, so forgive me. I believe it was north of $6 million an acre, give or take. Why not have a developer come in and develop whatever they'd like and then just collect money forever instead of having costs up front for the city? Can you explain to folks why that isn't the best course?
Well, I think what you're going to get with this deal is an anchor development that actually spurs the type of energy and excitement that you will you'll need, frankly, to attract additional capital to this area. When you're talking about the Commanders and a more than $2.7 billion contribution, which marks the largest private investment, as I understand, in D.C.'s history, you're talking about spurring the type of confidence in the market that will attract more people to want to invest in this development. The city's economic future, to me, is tied to what we do at this site. And I think it makes sense to have a master developer with the stadium as the anchor, building the parking facilities that are going to feed our fans from Virginia, fans from Maryland and across the region to this site, while also making sure that we have parcels that are carved out for the sorely needed housing along that area as well. But other community amenities beyond housing that talks about, you know, parks and retail spaces, recreational facilities. We're talking about building an entirely new, vibrant, livable community that meshes with some of the existing neighborhoods that are already there and encourages residents, I think, both new and old, to live, work, and play in that community.
To this point, and we're talking to at-large council member Kenya McDuffie, kind enough to join us on Grant and Danny from the D.C. City Council, there have been four public yeses and two public noes, and we have had people on both sides of the conversation tell us that there are and are enough votes and not enough votes to get this done. Do you think if there was a vote today that it would pass?
There isn't a vote today, and I think, you know, people need an opportunity to actually get the deal from the mayor. I know there's been a lot of leaks and conversations about what's out there. I know the mayor's talked publicly about aspects of the deal, but the council doesn't have that yet. But I do want to remind critics of what smart investment in stadiums look like in the District of Columbia, right? Think about what Nats Stadium did for our Capitol Riverfront area. Think about what Audi Field did and is doing for the area around Buzzard Point. We've got real life examples of how investments from the District of Columbia, in the case of Nats in building that stadium, in the case of Audi Field and infrastructure and parking, how it has transformed communities in a way that is helping to drive revenues for the district's bottom line. And so we don't have the deal yet at the council. When we get the deal, I'm going to ask the chairman to make sure that we move expeditiously to review it and pass it, because that's what residents want.
To your point, we work in the Navy Yard. So we are four blocks from the center field gate of Nats Park. That's our radio headquarters. It's where the interview is originating from here. And I was thinking just yesterday as I was driving into work and ended up walking and getting lunch at a restaurant that's only really there because of the ballpark, this is the proof that this is kind of the checkmate here. But the argument, I guess, that the other side would make would be Nats have 81 home games. You know, they do 150 events, whatever it is, when they have that Christmas deal for a month or two at Nats Park, and that football stadiums are different. What do you say to that in terms of the number of events being a sticking point, that there's just not enough business over there because you're not going to have 40,000 people there more than 20 or 25 times?
Well, I mean, that's a similar argument to what people were saying about Audi Field, right? Where Nats and baseball is different than soccer, right? And so, you know, we've heard those arguments before, but we also know that these smart people, these experts who manage these fields, know how to program these things outside of when the sports are being played there, right? And I think it's a smart investment. You can look around the country in other parts, in other cities where they've made similar investments in football stadiums and how it has spurred economic activity that wouldn't be there but for the construction of the stadium and because of the demand that exists with football. And so I'm really confident that this is going to help create the sort of economic activity that the District of Columbia needs so we are not so reliant on our federal government. We need the jobs, both construction and permanent, that will happen over the course of several years. We need the estimated $1.3 billion in annual revenue that ultimately will flow once this stadium is built and all the economic activity is generated as a result of the anchor being the Washington Commanders. And we're going to get a Super Bowl soon by the looks of it with all the amazing things that the Commanders have been doing as of late.
D.C. Councilmember Kenny McDuffie, kind enough to join us here on Grant and Danny. Councilmember, you mentioned federal government and the budget. Another thing that critics have said is this is budget slashing time. It seems like a lot of what they're arguing is a lot of services will be cut. A lot of essential things are going to have to go at the expense of, quote unquote, giving a billionaire $1 billion. That's not something necessarily I agree with, but that's one of the things that comes up there. So what about kind of the timing here with the potential budget issue for the city where there's going to be more expenditure?
Yeah, I don't agree with that characterization either. And I think, you know, people who are reasonable understand how you invest in areas to actually grow your local economy. And we're talking about catalyzing economic growth through this project, which is ultimately going to help to create the jobs that residents need. It is going to really help transform that area and provide, I think, you know, sustainable economic activity for multi-generations to come. And so I think we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity, if done right, to build the stadium, build all the associated hospitality, tourism activities, build the housing that's going to flow from this. And we can get this right. We just have to make sure that we are not slowing this down unnecessarily, that we're reviewing it, asking all the right questions, prioritizing our small businesses and the contracting opportunities, prioritizing D.C. residents for the jobs that are going to flow from this, and prioritizing the community-serving amenities that the people in the surrounding area say that they want and need and have wanted and needed for decades now. So I think there's a way to do it right and to prioritize actually expanding our economy, growing revenue so that we can provide for those social safety net programs that may have to be constrained because of the decisions that are being made at the federal government. What we're seeing happen to our budget right now is happening swiftly over the last several months through no fault of local elected officials. This is happening because of decisions by the federal government. And so we need to act to not be so reliant on our federal government and the jobs that flow from that. And I think having these really broad, comprehensive economic development projects help to do that.
So just a logistics question, if you don't mind. You've mentioned a couple times in this convo that the council members like yourself don't actually have the proposal or the deal yet. And I heard Mendelson as recently as today say the same thing. Why don't they? The deal was struck and kind of finalized before the press conference Monday, right? So, like, what is the next step and when does the mayor send it to them and why hasn't that happened?
Yeah, well, we made for the mayor to submit the budget to the council. And I've been in communication with the mayor. She's invited a number of council members. By the way, I understand she invited every council member to the press conference. But she's also chatted with us about some of the things that are likely to be in the budget. But because of this issue with Congress, particularly the House of Representatives, holding hostage our fiscal year 2025 budget, the mayor has not submitted the budget to the council yet. And
but
once she submits the budget
up,
to the council, we'll see it. Yeah.
We don't know when. I mean, they could hold it in perpetuity. As you said, it's kind of not what you guys are doing. It's what they're doing. So does that mean that the proposal for the stadium wouldn't be sent their way until the budget's complete? And if the budget's not complete and they keep holding the money, then when do they get the proposal?
Well, my understanding in talking to the mayor is that the fiscal year, not to get too much into weeds for your listeners, but the fiscal year 2026 budget and financial plan has already been completed. And so it is really the issue of the fiscal year 2025 budget, which our CFO says needs to be submitted together with the fiscal year 2026 budget and financial plan. Again, way into the weeds, but ultimately this is not something that is being slowed down because of the council. But it also is something that the mayor really is waiting on Congress to act. And if Congress doesn't act soon, unfortunately, I think she's going to be forced to submit the budget and slash it by significantly hundreds of millions of dollars solely because of the politics being played by elected officials that have really no care in the world for the people in the District of Columbia who need those services and supports that they get in our budget.
Councilmember, the final thing from me, what would you just say in general to kind of closing argument style for folks that may be on the fence or opposed at this moment, just to the plan as it stands?
If you are a fan of the Washington Commanders, if you cheered for them in 1992 or 88 or 83, or are a fan looking to cheer for the next Super Bowl, you want this stadium to be built right here in the District of Columbia. And if you live in the District of Columbia and want this council to be great stewards of your tax dollars, then you want this stadium to be built so that we can have a catalyst that spurs billions of economic development and revenues to our budgets to come to support all the services and everything else that our residents need. And so this is a smart play for the District of Columbia. It's not all fun and games. It is dollars and cents. And the smart thing to do is to get this budget to the council and get this a bill passed so that we can move forward.
If it doesn't happen, what would be lost for the city, in your opinion?
I think you lose that once-in-a-generation opportunity to have an amazing transformational economic development project on 180 acres of land that is laid dormant outside of the fields at RFK. Is laid practically dormant for decades. And if we want to continue to turn things around, really highlight the District of Columbia as the sports capital of the USA, then we need to get this deal done. I mean, it really makes sense. It makes sense from a financial point, but it also makes sense because this is exactly what residents want and what fans of the Commanders want. So let's get the deal done.
Councilmember, really appreciate you spending some time on a beautiful Friday with us. I'm sure this is like the most fun thing in the world for you to do and talk about city budgets and fiscal years and all those sorts of things. So appreciate you informing us and our listeners.
I appreciate you all having me on. It's always fun to be on with Grant and Danny. You all do a fantastic job. I love listening to your show.
Oh, it's very kind,
thank
sir. Thank you
so much. Means a lot. And go get this thing done. I want to see it happen. We're rooting for you. So go for it.
We're going to get it done. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Kenyon McDuffie, at-large council member, D.C. City Council. So we have spoken to Phil Mendelson. We have spoken to Kenyon McDuffie. We have had Brooke Pinto from Ward 2 on and Charles Allen from Ward 6 on. The count is currently 2-2 among our guests, but the formal count at this point is 4 yeses, 2 noes, and 6 maybes, if you're keeping score at home.
Then the mayor's a yes, but she doesn't get a vote on this part. So who knows, man?
She's very much a yes.
Dude, the local politics show, Grant and Danny, it's how we do it.
Who knew? And by the way, we have reached out to all 12 council members.
Yes.
I do want to say, selfishly, both the folks that we've agreed with here, or I'll speak for myself, that's the second time we've had Councilmember McDuffie on. He wrote an op-ed several months back about wanting the stadium here in D.C., and he was kind enough to join us. So it was great to have him back on. We had not talked to Brooke Pinto, but she was kind enough not only to come on, but to come to Capital One Arena
meet
in
us there,
her
yeah.
ward to sit down with us. And then even Charles Allen, who's one of the most adamant against the deal, he has always answered our calls and come on, which I love.
Yep.
Most of the council members to this point have just kind of said, here's my statement, or we got nothing to say right now. So I prefer the ones that actually, you know, answer questions publicly and let their constituents, you know, hear what they think. But maybe in due time, as they get more information, the others will continue to join us here on the show. So thank you very much to the folks who have been kind enough to stop by, including, by the way, if you missed it yesterday, the mayor, who was, I guess, just driving around in her car and called in on line four like she was Steve in Fredericksburg.
Love it.
That was hilarious.
Those, by the way, are some of my favorite things that happen.
I agree.
Like when the mayor calls, or like Joe Theismann, you know, one of my heroes, is like, you know, I was just listening to the show. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? I mean, it makes sense. We're broadcasting, but still, just crazy to me that somebody of import would give a darn. It's awesome.
You got one shot to get your football team from the nation's capital back in the city here. We will see if they can land the plane. Trevor Van Riemsdyk of the Capitals, a D.C. team that plays in Washington, D.C. They almost lost the Capitals and the Wizards, but eventually got a deal done with Ted Leonsis, gave him some money to keep the teams there, or else they would have gone across the river, which would have been unbelievably damaging to that Penn Quarter neighborhood. Van Riemsdyk's going to join us next on G&D here on The Fan.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Lock back for Savard. Back in net is Dobesh. Everyone standing here in the nation's capital. The Caps are moving on as the puck goes far wing. Chipped up in the air by Trevor Van Riemsdyk to the Montreal line. For the first time since 2018, the Capitals nail down a best of seven series. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Montreal. Logan Thompson and the Capitals are moving on to round two.
John Walton has heard right here on The Fan, the Caps with a 4-1 game five win and a 4-1 series win, taking care of business with three victories on home ice to move on to round two. Caps playoff coverage on The Fan brought to you by A-Strim Carpentry. For over 25 years, A-Strim's been a trusted trade partner for new home builders in the DMV. They specialize in full-service interior trim carpentry, handling everything from supply to installation, turnkey, and hassle-free. Contact acetrim.com today. Acetrim, the home builder's trade partner. Let's go right now to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And welcome onto the show, Caps defenseman Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who was a huge part of a series win over Montreal. Trevor, thank you for the time. How are you?
Good. How about you?
We're great, buddy. Congrats on the series win. My first question is, when are you guys playing again?
I don't know. It seems kind of strange that to have this long of a break this time of year, but we'll take it, use it to our advantage, and enjoy this beautiful weather we've been having. It's been nice, but obviously I think guys are slowly starting to get that itch to get this next series started, especially because we know who we're playing.
Yeah, it would be nice to know when we're playing at this point as a fan base.
It's just weird to want that, yeah.
You know, I know you guys probably as players want that as well, but let's let the National Hockey League take their time whenever they're ready. Maybe they will clue us in on what's next. But I want to go back to Montreal for a second. You guys over the years, and I don't mean you and this group, this iteration, but the organization generally, finishing series has been tough, and ending things in 4 and 5 games has just kind of been non-existent. How are you able to, in a lot of close games with them throwing everything at you, finish them off the way that you did? I don't want to use the word casually because you had to battle, but as far as playoff series is go, that one kind of came and went quickly by cap standards.
Yeah, no, it was a great series for us, and I thought we played really, really well. I thought that game 3, obviously, that atmosphere in Montreal, and they were desperate. They needed that win. That game probably got away from us a little bit. But, I mean, you look back at the series and those first 2 games, I thought we played well. But, I mean, they still ended up being super tight, one in overtime, one where they were throwing everything at us late, and LT had to make some huge saves. So, always confident in our group, but a bounce here, a bounce there, and all of a sudden they win one early on, and then it's a totally different series. So that's just kind of how playoff hockey goes. You can play almost identical games, and some games you'll get a bounce, some games you won't, and you can't dwell on it too much, the wins or the losses. You just got to take each game as it comes.
Trevor Van Riemsdyk with us here on Grant and Danny. You mentioned Logan Thompson, Trevor, and good heavens, he was outstanding in that first series for you guys. A, just your thoughts on him, but B, what's it like on ice when I'm thinking of that one, like from the high slot that he robbed with his glove that was a goal, like 999, whatever times out of a billion, and he just ripped it up and just like had it and had that look, and they were so dejected. What's it like on ice when a save like that happens? Are you know, positively giving him an attaboy or something like that, or just talk about him and what's it like when he makes one of those oh my god saves?
Yeah, he's been awesome. He's done it all year, and he's been huge for us to be in the position that we're in. And yeah, I think that is kind of the way he does it, kind of in that casual way. Sometimes it can be frustrating for other teams, especially in a playoff series. As you get going, you feel like you're doing all the right things, getting all the chances, and when a goalie's standing on its head, it definitely takes a lot of mental strength to not let it get to you and just stay on your game. I know their goalies in Montreal played really well, and you can feel it in those games where you feel like, oh, we should be winning, we really should. It takes a lot of discipline and diligence to stay with the program and not try to do too much or try to do, oh, now I got to do more because this isn't working. It's just you got to stick to that plan, and that's hard to do. And when LT's standing on his head and it feels like nothing's getting by him, that's a nice feeling to have when you're on the ice and on the bench.
Trevor Van Riemsdyk is with us, one of the unsung heroes of the Caps' series win over Montreal. Just marvelous. A couple of assists in Game 4, including making the play to spring Mangiapane for the game winner. Had 3 games where he had over 16 minutes TOI in this series. And with what's going on defensively, no Marty Ferravari, which is a huge blow. Alexiev playing a little more than he has. I mean, Van Riemsdyk's really had to step up and was massive. In fact, in the post-game victory speech from Spencer Carberry to the team, he only singled out one player. He only called out one guy, and it was you. Let's listen to that from after the game.
One more guy I want to highlight, okay? And this guy doesn't get a ton of credit, but I thought he was phenomenal in this series. Trevor Van Riemsdyk. Yeah!
I mean, Carly's losing it. Everyone's going crazy. Like, a lot of times he singles out little plays. He's like, I like this board battle from Willie in the second. That hit got us going. Hey, and how about LT? And everyone claps. He called out one guy who had a great series, and it was Trevor Van Riemsdyk. How about that?
Yeah, that was obviously extremely special. And the guys to give me a reaction like that, it definitely meant a lot to me. And, yeah, I mean – but you look back on a series, and so many guys did so many things. Willie was a force all series. LT stood on his head. So Obviously, throughout the series, different games, different guys stepped up, and obviously to get that from Carbs was special. But there's definitely 20 plus guys that have done a ton for us in that series, and the best part is we just get to start over and try to do it again in this next series. So it definitely meant a lot to me, and to have everyone react the way they did, it meant a ton. But yeah, I think he could have said that about a lot of guys. Anytime you win a series in five games like that, there's definitely a lot of guys doing things well.
So, Trevor, speaking of doing things well, okay, so I'm a rube. I could sit there and, like, in mixed company and be like, you know what a good series is? Dylan Strome, because he had, like, a million points, you know? I'm good at that level. How will I know that TVR is on his game? Like, how do I know that you're having a good series to the point that Coach Carbs is going to call you out?
Yeah, I think the most important thing in my game is breaking the puck out of our zone well. I think and Al Alexiev, you got to give him props. Obviously, not playing a ton during the regular season, and then you step into a playoff. I mean, he had to do it last year too. He did it awesome, and this year has been no different. He stepped in. I mean, going into that Montreal building on the road, he handled himself like a veteran. And yeah, I think when we're playing well, we're just trying to be out of our end as quick and as smooth as possible. You know, it's. If you're not hearing my name too much, that's probably a good thing. And, yeah, especially against a Carolina team coming up who can really forecheck and really get on you, making those plays in your own end, staying composed while a lot of chaos is around you is important. And when you can do that, it just makes your game look that much better when you're getting most of your touches in the offensive end instead of the defensive zone.
And Alexiev did it without his teeth, too. He had a couple of teeth get left on the ice there. Which,
just a warrior to come back like that after taking that right in the mouth, and the toothless grin after the big win was great to see. But yeah, he's done an awesome job. You can't stress how tough that must be to stick with it mentally, physically throughout a long year, and to step right in the playoffs and just like he hasn't missed a beat and playing with confidence, making plays. And it's we're going to need him if we're going to win another series, and he hasn't showed any signs of slowing down.
I want to preview the Canes and talk about that team in just a moment. Trevor Van Riemsdyk's with us, one of the American skaters on the Caps squad, a New Jersey native. So maybe we can ask him about some of his other sports proclivities before we get out of here. But by the way, by the end of the series, you were getting taken in our goals draft that we have here on Grant and Danny. So we do a little snake draft where we pick the Capital to score a goal, and we have a little ongoing scoreboard. And TVR
started.
You were
getting favorable odds for making that pick.
it's 15 deep. We go three-round snake draft. But by the end of the series, just the way you were playing and activating, you were coming off the board.
Yeah. I mean, I probably should have scored. I had a little half breakaway there early in game five, and I probably look like a guy who doesn't score much with my attempt, but I appreciate the love.
You got your op for sure. All right, let's talk Canes for a minute. The Penguins have long been the team that collectively as a fan base we hate the most, but the Hurricanes are trying real hard to give them a run for their money. Obviously, the 2019 series, going back way into the past, 3-2 series lead, Fogle cheap shots, Oshie, everything goes off
on
the
rails. I was on that Carolina team.
Well,
I wish you about that.
That Fogle hit was nonsense. So you can text him when we're done. That was BS. but anyway, so then you know a thing or two about Ron Brind'Amour, who I think's a big pain in the ass too.
Yeah, Roddy's for sure passionate, and when he played and when he coaches, he definitely brings the energy behind the bench, and their team style, the way they play, is a direct correlation to that. So they're definitely, I know teams hated playing against us when I was there, and I know it's definitely a pain in the ass playing them now. They're super direct. You know what they're going to get. They're not going to surprise you with anything crazy, but they're super hardworking and dedicated to the way they play, and they're all bought in. And when you have 20 guys that are kind of doing the same thing on the same page, it'll make it tough to play against. And I think that's what's made us so good this year, is we're all kind of on the same page doing the same thing. We play a little different than Carolina, obviously, but you can see the power of getting everyone on the same page, pulling in the same direction. And it'll be an exciting series. We've definitely had some exciting regular season games against them this year, so there's no love lost, and that only makes for more fun.
So Danny and I always wonder this. Who's the guy you think will hate the most by the end of the series? Like Jalen Chatfield, number five, is still circled for me. Now Duhame whooped his butt and got even after he slammed Mikey on the ice. And Mikey shouldn't have picked that fight, let's face it. That's not where we need Michael McMichael being. But then you can't slam him on the ice, so Duhame, doggy went and beat him up, so we like that. But who's the guy by the end of the series that you think we're going to despise the most on the Hurricanes?
Oh, jeez. Well, I mean, they've got a bunch of guys that play that style that run around and cause a lot of chaos, and they do it with a smile on their face. So, I mean, Martinook
sounds like something I'll hate for sure.
Yeah, but Martinook's made a career out of it as being just a high energy, really hardworking guy, and he's had a heck of a year for himself. Him and Jordan Staal kind of playing together all year long, and they've put up some really good numbers. And then, I mean, even their top line, it's not a top line where it's just kind of on the perimeter and playing, kind of making fancy high-end plays. They play hard too. So I'm sure the fans will all have their targets, and we'll have ours too, and they'll have their guys of ours that they don't like, and that's what makes playoff hockey fun. I know in this Montreal series, we were things were boiling over, things were hostile, but at the end of the day, the series ends, and you get in line and shake the other guy's hand. As tough as it may seem after games 1, 2, 3, 4, you can't imagine it, but when things settle down, it's everyone's just trying to get the same thing accomplished and do the same thing, and that's helped their team win. So I think when you're within the series and things are going on, the crowd gets wild and all that stuff, it's hard to think that you're going to be shaking hands with some of these guys. But I think as you settle in, when the series finally ends, you realize everyone's just kind of trying to do the same thing.
Trevor, my last one super quick is, how do you approach the agitator? In other words, you can't let him get away with everything because you can't just start walking all over us. But at the same time, you can't do the thing that they want you to do, which is to get off your game and get all pissed off and make it a point to, like, find them. So, like, what's the line? How does it work?
Yeah, I think every team and every guy that kind of embraces that role, you kind of treat differently. And I think, like you said, the most important thing is you can't allow it to affect negatively the team game, to let our focus be more on retribution and getting guys rather than the final scoreboard. So there's always, series can be long, 7-game series. There's always going to be times to make big hits and kind of get back at guys a little bit. And if they're going to hit you, you're going to hit them and not let them off the hook. But yeah, I think the most important thing is to not get wrapped up in it. Cause a lot of guys in that role, that's what they want. They want you thinking about them, like, oh, how am I going to hit them? And oh, instead of making the smart play, I'm going to try to inflict some pain. And that's never where you want your headspace to be. I think it's a fine line, and the guys that are best at that agitator role do a good job of it. But it's you don't want to back down from anyone. You don't want to let anyone on the other team get away with anything that puts guys at our team at risk. But also you want to put the team first always.
TVR, Capitals, getting ready for the Canes, played in all 82 games this season, was a plus 20, was really one of the best-kept secrets on the squad. By the way, are you an NFL fan? You a Giants fan? What's your non-hockey sports proclivity?
Unfortunately, I'm a Jets fan, a Knicks fan, no. And I'm not a huge baseball guy, but I don't even think I'd pick a baseball team, but yeah, Jets and Knicks. But Knicks are trending. Knicks are trending.
Bro, the shot last night was – that was badass.
Yeah. No, the Knicks are they got it going on the last couple of years. And to see, I just see social media clips, but when the Knicks are good, that city is going wild. And yeah, so it's fun to see them doing well. But yeah, the Jets, I love the Jets, and That's just been a tough ride lately.
Yeah, sorry about that. We can relate as Commanders fans that used to be Redskins fans.
Hey, you guys are looking looking like you're heading in the right direction here.
Jaden Daniels
as the team just taking off.
He was sitting on the glass cheering you guys on. The whole quarterback.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was pretty cool. Well, hey, man, we are so fired up about the series win over Montreal. Cannot wait for this to-be-determined game one, maybe the NHL.
Play again, it'll be fun.
The NHL will let us know sometime in the next week or two. Yeah, hopefully it's sometime in May.
It'll be in May.
It starts, we'll be there with bells on. So go get them.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, no, thanks for having me, guys, and it should be a great series whenever that is.
Trevor Van Riemsdyk in the Capitals just waiting to figure out when they're going to play game one against the Carolina Hurricanes. Grant and Danny with you on The Fan. Thanks to Trevor Van Riemsdyk of the Capitals for looking back at the Montreal series and looking ahead to a matchup with the Hurricanes. More on the Caps with Mike Vogel coming up on the Beltway Blitz. We'll also be covering the NFL and the Commanders. It is Grant and Danny, and it is time for our double play. Normally on a Friday, we go winning off the field, but it's going to be abbreviated just a couple of minutes here, so let's keep with the double play driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today.
Jeeps, I beat a long-running video game last night, Black Myth Wukong. I took a couple vacations from it just to go do some other stuff just because I really liked the game. This is a strange thing about me. I really liked the game, and I wanted to kind of stay in the world for as long as possible. So I actually would take breaks from playing it. I'm kind of go back and level grind a little bit and earn some of the extra things. But one of the incredible success stories in the gaming world here over the last couple of years, studio that nobody's ever heard of, out of China, basically this Chinese mythology, they made it into a game, and it did tens of millions of sales in terms of number, not just the dollars, it's billions of dollars, over around the world. Pretty incredible, but I beat it last night. I'm happy to answer any questions from you. I know it's something you did a while ago.
Yeah, so I don't know what took you so long. I beat this game. How long ago? Was it 2 years ago, I think, that I beat it?
It came out last year, but I know your point. I mean, you've been out
for a while. As you know, I got the advanced copy, That's part of why. For those of you that don't know, Danny is familiar with this, but they give four or five of us that are true gamers that beat games very quickly these copies of these games years before the folks like Danny get them, respectfully.
Just the regular people.
Just normal people.
Yeah.
And so we beat them, see how long it takes. So it took you longer than it would have taken me. But I'm glad that you finally beat it. What was the hardest part? Was it the boss at level 4, or what got to you?
You actually joke, but in the secret realm, outside the pagoda realm in the third area, okay, so there's a secret realm you have to navigate. The pagoda was a big pain in the ass.
I thought pagoda realm was fairly seamless. You had issues with that?
Yeah, that realm is a pain in the butt. Everyone knows it.
Okay.
But finding the secret realm and beating the Dragon King Erlang was
Erlang.
An unbelievable pain in the butt. In fact, we're talking about it in the chat right now. The only way I could do it was to change the different soaks on my gourd to restore the chi. To be able to use Cloud Step multiple times, because you leave the decoy behind. I maxed out Cloud Step for the battle, and then you can do a max focus buildup for a heavy attack to stun him.
Wait, you maxed out Cloud Step for the battle?
I had to, every time. It's the only way I could
beat him. I can't believe you did that.
The only way I could beat him, only way I could beat the optional boss at the Ruyi Skull location, the Smith. I mean, the only way to do that was Cloud Step. I'm not good enough anymore to do regular combat, all the dodging and different stuff. I'm not going to say I have to cheese it, but it's closer to having to cheese it.
Soaks on the gourd sounds like something Dara should dump. I mean, you know, I don't know exactly what it means in the video game parlance, but that doesn't sound like a video game
to
me.
No, it's very regular. It's very regular because in order to
classify.
Re-up your health.
Re-up health.
You drink wine from your gourd, okay? And there are different soaks that you can soak the gourd in to have slight enhancements.
I'm just glad you finally beat the game. A lot of us have been talking in the video game community about what was going on with you. So now what do you do?
Got
now
that you've Ragnarok. Beaten it. Yeah, so now that I've beaten it, like I stayed in the war for a little bit, and I said goodbye my own way, beat a couple of the bosses again, let you run through some of the new game plus, and I started God of War Ragnarok, which has still been left in my queue.
Thor Ragnarok?
No, God of War Ragnarok.
Oh, I just got Thor Ragnarok. That one doesn't come out yet. It's going to be a couple more years, but God of War Ragnarok, I got that one in 21, so yeah. I forgot about that.
You're actually right. It's a few years old. But so what's weird is we're used to the mythology from the MCU, so the bad guys in this one are Thor and
they're
Odin,
Thor and Odin and, yeah.
and Baldur.
Loki and Baltar.
And Freya.
Freya's not in that one. Freya won't be in that one.
Literally the opening scene, she's in it. So, like, you can't.
That's the only time you'll see her. You do not see her after that.
That's not true. I mean, it's not true, right?
No, it's totally true. You'll find out. You'll see.
Admit that that's not true real quick.
Are we talking about Freya?
Yes.
That's totally true.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm happy for you. You're talking about the same Freya I am?
Yes.
Significant figure in Norse mythology, known as the goddess of love, beauty, fertility, and magic.
Yeah, in the previous
game. The daughter of the sea god.
Well, the previous game, I you know, quite frankly, it's a little bit of spoiler here, but it's been out for long enough. Kratos does battle with her son, and he wins.
So this is Freya's sister.
Yeah, well, Freya hasn't forgiven him.
Freya is also associated with war, death, and gold. That Freya?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, same one. You'll only see her in the opening credits.
All right.
Anyway, congratulations.
Thank you, buddy. Big deal for me.
The Beltway Blitz comes your way next.